I would like to welcome everyone to this exclusive interview with Versus announcer Brian Engblom. We are thrilled to have Brian with us today along with everyone else on this call. We have compiled a terrific group of NHL bloggers for today's call and are excited to hear what everyone has to say. But first, Brian, it's great to have you here today. How's it going?
Everything's going great, thanks. Thank you very much for having me. I know fans are very excited about the playoffs. All the series have been terrific, and I'm sure they're going to continue to be terrific from here on in.
Great. Well, before we open the phone lines today to our bloggers and get started with Q&A, we have a few questions from our followers from Twitter. Who is the better skater, Crosby or Ovechkin?
Oh, man, that's an interesting question, a tough one. Better skater. I think balance-wise, I would give it to Sidney Crosby. His base is so solid that he is so difficult to knock off the puck. They're a little bit different kinds of skaters, but if I had to choose one, all around, I give the edge to Sidney by just a little bit.
All right, great. What does the Ovechkin-Crosby matchup mean for the future direction of hockey?
Well, I think it's great any time you have two of the biggest stars in the league go up against each other in the playoffs. The regular season is exciting, but there's nothing like playoff matchups. That's what develops, you know, big-time rivalries. You can play each other and be in the same division for years and not play against each other in the playoffs, and it becomes a little ho-hum after a while. But when you have a series or two or three or ten or whatever, you know, the history between, like, say, you know, that's why Montreal Canadiens and Boston Bruins have had such a hated rivalry, because they've been playing against each other in the playoffs for decades. So to have the start of a big rivalry for two young players that are leading the league in so many different ways, both on and off the ice, it's terrific for the NHL, and I hope they have to play against each other every year for the next 10 years.
Okay, great. Thank you. I think it's time we open the phone lines to our bloggers and get started with Q&A session. And our first question comes from Brian in London, Ontario.
Hi, Brian. Brian Thiel from Hockey Barn here. Now, Semyon Varlamov has been the biggest breakout star so far of these playoffs. Who else has really caught your eye?
Let's see. Breakthrough stars. You're putting me on the spot here. He's done a terrific job, no doubt. I think LaRose playing in Carolina has been a surprise. He's got a lot of first-line time. He, up till this point in his career, Chad LaRose has been mostly a checker, an energy guy, et cetera. But he's put some points on the board. He's getting a lot of ice time. He's getting important ice time. I would put him right up there. Let's see. I think Michael Ryder, before last game, none of the Bruins were very good last game. Michael Ryder has had a terrific start to these playoffs. He's been filling the net for the Boston Bruins, and I think you know, that's been interesting to watch. Let's see, out west, who do we have? Let me think here. I think Dave Boland in Chicago. He's got a couple of points, but it's not always measured by points. I think he's been a really important player for the Blackhawks. And also Dustin Byfuglien. Those two guys put some points on the board, but the tenacity with which they played and the physical presence has been a major factor in Chicago being successful to this point. So off the top of my head, those are the first names that jump out to me.
Awesome. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
We'll go next to Ron in Buffalo, New York.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Hi, Ron. How are you?
Very good. I just have a kind of a two-part question. I'm sorry, I'm from thehockeybarn.com.
Uh-huh.
With all the media attention surrounding the Penguins-Cavs series, for obvious reasons, you got two superstars in there, seems a little bit of focus is lost or attention's lost, taken away from the Carolina-Boston series, which I think could be a phenomenal series. In your opinion, do you think this postseason is going to solidify Eric Staal as a true leader of that Carolina Hurricanes team? He seems to really... The team just seems to really look at him now, Brenda Moore getting up in age, and I was just wondering what your thoughts were on that.
Yeah, well, in my opinion, he has been the leader ever since they won the Cup a couple of years ago. It's not a new thing. He is their star player. There's no doubt about it. He established that with the performance he put on. He could easily have won the Conn Smythe Trophy over Cam Ward when they won the Cup a few years ago. So in my mind, this is nothing new for Eric Staal. The performance he put on in the first round against New Jersey, especially Game 6 and Game 7 in the clutch when they really needed him, is what defines a star. When you're really needed by your team, you step up and you produce points and you put on, you know, a show, and you dominate the ice. So I think Eric Staal has done that ever since they won the Cup. So I don't see anything changing there. I agree with you that probably not enough time is spent looking at the Boston-Carolina series. It's an interesting matchup because Boston has, in my mind, a more well-rounded team because they have more depth at forward and more ways to hurt you. But having said that, you know, when stars give performances like Ward and Staal did in Game 2 and they win that big game in Boston, you know, such a difficult place to play, that shows the level that they're capable of and why they were able to knock off the New Jersey Devils. So you can't ever count Carolina out until you've beaten them four times.
Okay, thank you much.
Sure.
And we'll go next to Mike in San Jose, California.
Hi, Brian. Mike Chen from Kukulis Corner. Thanks for coming on. I have a two-part question for you. It's about officiating. You know, we always debate the officiating come down the stretch run of the season and the playoffs. First part is, how do you feel the level of officiating has been? And second part, as a former player, do you consider letting the players play, quote-unquote, as not calling the penalties to keep play going, or do you prefer strict rule enforcement to prevent clutching and grabbing?
Well, I prefer strict rule enforcement as far as clutching and grabbing. Absolutely. That's the part of the game that had really dragged us down prior to the lockout and the biggest improvement in the overall quality of the game since we came out of it. And it was a great idea or a great way to, you know, reinforce the rules. That's terrific. The Crosbys and Malkins and Ovechkins and Stalls and everybody else, all the star players, that's what people come to see, and that's what they want to see on television. And that was being lost because they had to fight through things that just shouldn't have been there. So I'm totally in favor of the clutching and grabbing being taken out of the game. The game is being played in a terrific way now. It's very entertaining, and we get to see these guys accomplish what they're supposed to accomplish. Having said that, every sport, doesn't matter if it's football or whatever, you know, and the NHL is I think the most difficult for referees to handle because the speed of the game and the constancy of the game. Football, you have one play and it's over. I mean, hockey can go on for 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes at a time without a whistle. And a lot of stuff goes on, and a lot of players come and go, and you have a lot of body contacts and interchanges between players, and the puck changes hands 20, 30, 40 times just in a space of time like that. It's really difficult for them. So it is a moving, living part of the game that teams just have to deal with. Of course there are mistakes. There have been mistakes this year. There have been mistakes every year, and some of them are critical to teams. I think in the Detroit game last night, it was unfortunate, the Hossa goal. When you look at it, the puck was obviously open and free, and the goal should have counted, but it's part of the game. It's not the referee's fault. They have those kinds of situations all the time. He was behind the goaltender on such an angle, he couldn't see that the puck was free. And, you know, they make those whistle calls I don't know how many other times in that game and in other games, and it's the right call. This one turned out to be unfortunate, and it obviously was a drastic consequence for the Detroit Red Wings. There are other examples. Pittsburgh was unhappy with the Ovechkin goal right off the faceoff after the Malkin penalty. They thought it was interference. I could definitely see that as well, too. There's going to be lots. You could pull out a ton of them, you know, and there's a high stick there and a punch there, and should this guy have gotten suspended? And it's tough and it's complicated. And I think, you know, the players blow off steam and they bite their tongues and so do the coaches and say, okay, you know, we can only complain so far. That's the way sports are. You have to be a big boy about it and you have to continue on.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Brian.
Sure.
Our next question comes from John in San Jose, California.
How's it going, Brian? This is John Swenson from SharkSage.com.
Hi, John.
Hi, John.
How's it going?
Good.
What do you think has made a bigger impact for their team, Semyon Varlamov or Jonas Hiller? And how do you think they're going to react to the loss of John Erskine and James Wisniewski, two pretty physical defensemen who clear the crease in front of them?
Yes, no doubt about that. They, I think you'd have to call it a dead heat. I mean, they've both gotten their teams to where they're at right now. They've both played some phenomenal hockey. Varlamov has made some just, you know, incredible save, which has been well documented, especially the one on Crosby. And Hiller has done it, you know, against San Jose, had some terrific games, has been really, really good in every game. Very few, you know, soft goals against him. And, you know, the other in that overtime game, would he have 30 saves in regulation and 29 in overtime when they really poured it on to him? So he's been up to the task. They both have been terrific. Wisniewski will be sorely missed for however long he's going to be out. I hope it's not long, but he has been very underrated in his play because he is physical and because he does a great job in his own zone, but he's also a very efficient passer of the puck. And he's had a heck of a lot of ice time, so he will be sorely missed. And for similar reasons, John Erskine has been very overlooked, I think. I think he's played terrific, and he surprised me a little bit. He's been consistently very good and very solid. He doesn't try to do anything outside of his capability, which is really important in the playoffs. Teammates and coaches need to know what your level is and what you're going to give them every night. And the most important thing is what your minimum level that you're going to get. Coaches are always looking at that. They can tell when their guy is on, whether it's Ovechkin or whether it's Erskine or whether it's the goaltender. They want to know, okay, it doesn't look like he quite has it, but can I use him in this situation? Is his minimum level that I've come to know, is that going to be enough for me to put them out in this situation? When they're hot and they're playing well, it's a no-brainer. It's easy, and you play them as much as you can. But I think that John Erskine's level overall, at his worst times, has very much improved, and at his best has also improved. So he's overall been a very effective player, and he's going to be missed. He already has been. I thought Sloan did a nice job stepping in for him the other day. So far, so good.
One follow-up question. Do you think Anaheim's bad boy reputation around the NHL is deserved or maybe not deserved?
Oh, sure it is. You look the way they play and their core players. Just take one look at their faces and the way their body language and the demeanor with which they play as soon as the puck is dropped, even before the puck is dropped. You take one look at Chris Pronger, and his reputation precedes him for sure. But it goes right through to Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaff, too. They carry themselves in a certain way, and they like it. They've created that personality, persona for their team, and it's very effective. Now, that sword cuts two ways, and you could say that they get called for too many penalties sometimes, but it is what you make it. And I think for the most part, they come out to the good. They've been very smart in these playoffs, and one of the reasons they beat San Jose is they didn't go over the top all the time and take a ton of penalties. Yes, they did at times, but they also were very good overall. Pronger took, in particular, took very few penalties so far in the entire playoffs, and that's an important factor, and he has to continue to do that, as do the rest of them.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
And Matt in Arlington, Virginia, your line is open.
Hi, Brian. Matt Layton from thehockeywriters.com.
Hi, Matt.
In the past few days, there's been some talk about the curvature of Ovechkin's stick. Do you think the Penguins play this card, or does this just not happen anymore? I mean, we've seen Spezza get caught with an illegal stick earlier this year, but do you think Pittsburgh would really attempt to call Ovi out on this?
Never say never. Anything, it's within the rules, and in a key situation, yes, I could see it getting called. It is still in the rule book, and because of that, he is susceptible to that, and he ought to be aware of it. It certainly is a big curve. There is no doubt. It's been talked about before, and because of the playoff intensity and the possible ramifications, I think that's why it's gotten people's attention from time to time. It's out there. The players know. The players can judge by looking, you know, when they're faced off against the guy. They know what a player is using. And you take that chance. You never know for sure until you get that instrument on it and know. But, yeah, he's got a big curved stick, and I wouldn't put anybody, and I wouldn't blame Pittsburgh one way or the other if they did or didn't do it.
Thanks a lot.
Yep.
Brian in St. Louis, your line is open.
Hi, Brian. My question is, you know, we've seen that the matchup between Crosby and Ovechkin has gotten a lot of attention, and I guess deservedly so, and I'm sure the league is happy with that. Do you see any downside to all the focus in this playoff season on just or mainly those two players when there's what I think is a pretty tremendous crop of young stars coming up in the NHL?
I think it's always star-driven no matter what the sport is. I mean, when I look at football, and I don't, you know, I watch it, I don't follow it, I don't work in the business, but all I ever see is Peyton Manning. And, you know, it's all they ever talk about is Peyton Manning, and who do you see on every commercial for MasterCard or whomever else is Peyton Manning. And whether, you know, even when he's not in the playoffs, and then, of course, when his brother goes and wins a Super Bowl, it's the two brothers, you know, that you see all the time. It is what it is, and advertisers and leagues and whatever, today's marketing machines, you know, do that, and they apply, they appeal to the star quality. The North American public is very much geared to star quality in any sport. I think that's a proven track record. Teams that have sort of no-name defenses and whatever are fun to watch, and everybody likes a winner. But, you know, it just is what it is. The stars are whom they are, and as long as they continue to be stars and continue to produce, then leagues would be silly, including the NHL, not to continue to market them. It doesn't mean that the other ones, other players aren't stars as well, too. It's all a matter of velocity, maybe you could call it that. And right now, and since they came in the league for that matter, I guess you could say Ovechkin and Crosby came in with a lot of velocity, and they haven't lost any of it.
All right, thanks.
Okay.
Our next question is a follow-up from Brian in London, Ontario.
Hi, Brian. I was just wondering who has really not stepped up to the plate in the playoffs, because we've seen a lot of players come up and perform unexpectedly, but who did you see coming to the second round that they really need to step up their game?
Let me see. I kind of have to go team by team in my head here. I think that Marian Hossa hasn't hit the level yet that you would expect, because he is a star player, he's a producer, and it's those are the easiest guys, you know, to point the finger at. So he hasn't had the production yet that I expected. Datsyuk has played well, but in the Anaheim series so far, he doesn't have a lot of points. That's not all on him, because he's such a playmaker that some of the guys he's made great plays to haven't cashed in yet. The goaltender Hiller has kind of shut them down. But you can look there. Let's see. Chicago, Vancouver. I'm off the top of my head. I think for the most part those guys have done a pretty good job. Washington, Kozlov has a couple of key points, but I think Washington would be much better off if they could get a little bit more production out of Kozlov. He seems to come and go, you know, throughout the playoffs, like he does through the season. He gets a lot of ice time on the prime line, and sometimes I think, you know, where did he go? Where has he been over the last, you know, two periods or three periods or whatever. So you tend to look in that direction. Let's see. Pittsburgh needs some guys to step up now and get some production. I mean, it's not all about Evgeny Malkin. We've talked a lot about him going goalless now in the last five games. That's pressure on him, but he's got point production. It's not like he doesn't have a point in the last five games. Sure, they want him to score, but I think it's time that some of the other guys that have stepped up, I believe they've got three guys who don't have a goal in the playoffs yet, Stahl, Kunitz, and who's the other one? Sikora. I believe those guys, none of them have a goal in the playoffs yet. So you wouldn't want that to go any longer, because they would at that point and should be now brought into that conversation with Malkin as to being, okay, it's not just Malkin. Crosby seems to be the only guy scoring here, and here's three guys that don't have any goals. Carolina, Eric Cole, I was stunned when I saw he had gone 20 games, I believe it was, without a point in the playoffs, which obviously goes back a couple of years. That's a phenomenal number for a guy of his talent. I know he did get a point the other day, an assist, but that's got to change. I mean, he's got to score some goals. He's got to take some pressure off of Eric Staal. Cole has got to produce, and I would say the same thing with Rod Brind'Amour. Brind'Amour's really having trouble producing in these playoffs too. And if you look back when he when they won the Cup a few years ago, Rod played his great gritty game that he always does, and he is now, but he had production. I believe he had 18 points, if my memory serves me right, during the playoffs when they won the Cup. And I think he's pretty much, I don't have stats in front of me, if he has a point, maybe that's it, I think, in these playoffs, and that's a very obviously big drop-off for Brind'Amour.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
And we'll go next to Bryce in Pittsburgh.
Hi, Bryce. Hi, Brian. I'm Bryce from, I believe, Black and Gold in Pittsburgh. Crystal Tang's listed as a game-time decision for tonight's game. If he doesn't play, how big of an impact will that have on the Penguins' defense and the power play tonight?
I'm sorry, you're talking about Crystal Tang?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I know he got banged up pretty good. I think it was Green that caught him along the boards there, and it looked like he tweaked up his shoulder or his elbow from the looks of that collision. I like the way he plays. I think he adds a lot to that team because he's got great wheels. Anytime you have a regular, out of the lineup, it hurts the feel of your team. Sometimes it can be a galvanizing thing, and it brings the team together and say, okay, you know, we got to buckle down and play because we're missing this guy or that. Vancouver Canucks last night would be a good example of that with two guys out of their lineup, and, they played extremely well and won the game. So Letang will definitely be missed because his ability to move the puck and skate with the puck.
Thanks, Brian.
Okay.
And we have a follow-up from Mike in San Jose.
Hi, Brian. Mike Chen again. There was a report the other day about the competition committee being very close to recommending 4-on-4 overtime after one playoff period. Now, even if the competition committee actually recommends this, do you actually see it passing through the Players Association and the Board of Governors?
That's a tough question. I don't know. I'm kind of glad they're going in that direction, whether it's after one period or two periods at least. I would definitely be in favor. I look back at some of the 3 and 4 overtime games over the last few years, and I think it loses something when it goes on too long. And the wear and tear on the players is really dramatic too. So I'd be fine with it after two periods. I guess I'd be fine with it after one overtime period as well too. The drama of 4-on-4 and the wide open hockey you would get, I think would be great. Whether or not it's going to pass right away, I don't know. Sometimes these things get turned down, and then the more you think about it, it's kind of a political thing almost, and the people who like it or don't like it discuss it a lot, and it either builds momentum or it loses it. I think that the NHL has been very innovative since the lockout in coming out of the lockout with some of the changes that they made and have followed up with since. So I think that there's probably more of a progressive attitude or more willing attitude to change, I guess, since the lockout. So I wouldn't doubt that that this could go through.
A quick follow-up to that. So you believe that one of the key drivers of this would be player fatigue?
Yeah. Wear and tear on the players is very dramatic. But I think also interest, too. As I said, I don't – by the time a game gets to a third overtime, I start going, okay, this has been great and the drama is wonderful, but somebody's got to score here, you know. I mean, there's only so much time everybody has to sort of donate to a game, as big a fan as you are. That's my opinion. Now, other people would say, oh, no, I'll watch for 8 hours if I have to. I think this is great. But I think you'll find a lot of people have a point at which they say, okay, let's get a winner here and get this over with. It's been a great game, but, you know, let's just move on. So that's why I think the 4-on-4, it definitely opens things up, and I think you would see results more quickly in a 4-on-4 situation, which would obviously be the idea there.
Okay, thanks, Brian.
And we'll go next to a follow-up from John in San Jose.
How's it going again? I have to ask about Boston. A quote stunned me from head coach Claude Julien after game two. He said it's just about wanting it more than the other team, and I thought tonight they wanted it a little bit more than we did. And to me, that shocks me a little, almost as much as the Sharks coming out flat in games one and two against Anaheim. Do you think at this point in the season, you know, maybe their regular season gave them too much time off, you know, like Anaheim had to battle their way in? How do you think Boston rebounds in game three? And what did your playing days, what were your locker rooms like getting fired up before a playoff game? Was it on the players or was it on the head coach to be a motivational factor?
Coaches can motivate you a little bit. They can help, but mainly it's an attitude that's developed with the team over the course of the year. And your core players really run the room, and it's really on the players more than the coach. Like I said, the coach can help, but I would put it more on the players for sure. I mean, you know why you're there, and it's not a matter of not wanting to win, which it sounds like maybe you're interpreting that a little bit. That's the best way to describe it. It's a strange dynamic to talk about, because you have to experience it in team sports, even as an individual. I mean, you get up for the game and you get ready to play, a big event, and collectively you just don't have it. You can't get it going. You're flat, and that's the best way we describe it when we look at it. And everybody's trying, but you just can't get the engine going. And you just can't change gears. Maybe you're stuck in second or whatever. There's all those different ways to try to explain it. But the psyche has to be – it's a fine balance between being afraid to lose and still being relaxed enough to go out there and play. And that's how the star players become star players, is they get it right. They know how to relax, how to work hard, be on edge, and be ready to play, but yet be able to relax in key scoring situations so they have those soft hands and can make those plays without being so over the top that they don't chop the puck up into little pieces, which lesser skilled players will do when they get too much into overdrive. It's a fine balance that you get there. You can't just go out and skate around 100 miles an hour, because that's only part of the game. You have to be able to pass the puck, be in sync with the game, and accomplish all these things as a team without going overboard. And sometimes you end up being a little too relaxed and a little too clinical and thinking about all these details of how do we pass it, how do we cover this guy, where am I supposed to be? Next thing you know, you've lost a lot of your energy and that juice that you're supposed to have in the game, and you've become a little too clinical and a little too detached, and next thing you know, the other team is just running over you because they've got the right combination. I guess that's the only way I can, the best I can do to describe what happens in those scenarios.
Thank you.
Ron in Buffalo, your line is open.
Yeah, so I got a follow-up question with my Eric Staal Carolina Hurricanes. What I'm wondering is, as a player like Eric Cole, who is struggling in the playoffs, struggled through the playoffs the last couple seasons, what does he bring to that team that just makes them, they get that 05-06 swagger back to him? Even when he's not scoring, it seems like he brings something, and I was just wondering what you thought it was that he brings.
Speed, power. He's a terrific power forward. He's got to be taking the puck and driving wide and trying to drive wide on that defenseman and take it right to the net. You got to try and round that corner and get to the net. Put the fear in that defenseman that he's going to be beaten one-on-one. And then have those collisions in the corners and along the boards and get the puck retrieval. He's really good at puck retrieval, too, when the puck gets dumped in by one of his teammates or maybe even by himself. You dump it in the corner, go in, you have those collisions with the defenseman, and you control the puck yourself. You make that short little pass to your support guy, and then you get to the front of the net. All those little things in short spaces Eric Cole is capable of. But I think he sometimes loses his ability to instill that wide power forward game. It's not an easy thing to do, but he needs to do it at least a few times a game to give his team confidence and to create those opportunities that they desperately need. He doesn't need to score a goal every time, But when he's playing that game and crashing around, the Eric Stahls and, you know, anybody, Samsonov, Ruutu, Brind'Amour, any of those guys, the defense, come right up behind. And, you know, loose pucks that are created by him trying to establish these parts of his game mean scoring opportunities and pandemonium for Boston Bruins. So that's the kind of stuff he needs to try to regain.
And our last question today comes from Brian in St. Louis.
So we have the same first name, and my friends tell me that I look a lot like you. And my question is, you know, if you're sick sometime, would you mind putting in a word with Versus that you know a ready fill-in for you on the studio show?
Well, yeah, I guess I could, you know, like a stunt double. That's
yeah,
what you're saying
here? Exactly.
Just don't get too good at it, or there won't be a second time. That's for sure.
All right, I appreciate it.
Okay, Brian, this has been fantastic. I just have one more question for you. What has it been like working with Versus in this year's NHL playoffs? How is it different from previous years, and what are your predictions?
Oh, it's been terrific. You know, the crew that we have and the guys that I work with on the set, Bill Patrick and Keith Jones, are terrific. And, you know, we've developed a chemistry over the last few years, and it makes for a great environment. But that chemistry goes beyond the three of us to the camera people and the audio people, et cetera, that are there in the studio with us. And it's tough. As fun as it is covering all these playoff games, the first two rounds are a real grind. I mean, we've had one day off, which was the Wednesday before the second round started, and it's a lot of hockey. It's a lot of doubleheaders, and it's a lot of work. Our tape people are terrific, and they have to work under pressure in short spaces of time to give us the looks that we want to put up on the air, because sometimes some of the best plays in a period or at the end of a game happen, you know, right at in the last minute or two. To turn that stuff around and get it ready for air, you know, 2 or 3 minutes later is very difficult, and that's the challenge that we face. So everybody works under pressure for extended periods of time here, and that's a terrific feeling. You know, you feel like you're on a playoff team yourself in many ways when you're working at Versus, and that's great. You feel like you're competing with them to give the best coverage we can, and that's a great challenge, and it's a lot of fun because live TV stuff happens. You know, machines go down and things don't come out the way they're supposed to, and you just go on, just like being a player, and that's a real kick for me, and it allows me to be as close to the action as I can without being a player anymore. So that's all good. As far as the quality of the play, I think it's been terrific, better than ever. For reasons that I mentioned earlier, the quality of game is great. My prediction before the playoffs was to have Boston come out of the East and Detroit come out of the West. I'm not going to change that at this point. I think that, you know, obviously both teams are still in it. Their injuries change everything, and I've always said that along the line. And at the end of every series, you have a chance to sort of reassess, because if you have one or two key guys go down for the rest of the playoffs or whatever, you know, that changes everything dramatically. So that said, I'm still sticking with my two choices, and they're both hanging in there.
All right. Thank you for participating in today's call.